Welcome to episode 202 of the Cricket Her Weekly. Gosh, it's been a big week for women's cricket news, in particular England and English women's cricket news, because not only have we had the announcement of the main squad and the A squad to tour New Zealand, we have also had, finally, an official announcement from the ECB regarding Project Darwin, as in the restructure of domestic women's cricket in England. So I will just do a little bit of a summary of what the changes are going to be for anyone who has been under a rock for the last week, and then we will talk about our perspective on it. It's happening over the next few months, so we're going to have one more season of regional cricket, so everything will look the same for the forthcoming season, but then ahead of the 2025 English season we will have a different setup. The eight regional teams at the moment are independent entities that are kind of joined up to various different counties. But the ECB are doing a tender process whereby the 18 first-class counties plus the MCC are being invited to submit bids and asked to kind of write into their bids the reasons why they should be given the rights to host these eight professional women's teams. So the regions are going back to becoming counties, essentially. There's also some important stuff going on underneath that, because it's not just all about the stuff that's happening at the top, although that's what we've got most detail on at the moment. There's going to be these eight teams in tier one attached to counties, but then underneath that there will also be a tier two and a tier three, with also those teams attached to counties, but they will not be professional. There will be some funding available from the ECB, so there will be a lot more funding going into recreational county cricket than there is at the moment, and it will be kind of moving towards being more of a professional structure, but the players themselves in tiers two and three will not be professional as we understand it. So there's a kind of sort of a bit of a holistic restructure going on, but the main key point is that instead of there being regional teams, which they created in 2020, it's now going to be counties. Sid, your thoughts, please.
Well, I mean, first of all, just thinking about the process. I mean, yeah. You know, as Elvis once said, love me tender. Now, I mean, the very fact that they've been very transparent about the tender process is, first of all, is kind of really impressive.
Yeah.
They've actually released the tender document to the media, and they've done this press conference up front. And it's something that came across. You spoke to a few players for an article that you wrote for today's Observer, available in all good news agents.
And the players
really emphasised that, didn't they?
I mean, what
did Katie Levick have to say about that process, Raf?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's definitely a feeling that the players have been consulted. And Beth Barrett-Wild has spent several months in consultation with the PCA Women's Players Committee, and Katie Levick, when I interviewed her, basically said, we feel much more comfortable this time around than we did last time, because we actually know what's coming and we've been able to feed into the tender document, because we've been able to kind of put our views in and say where we think that maybe some of the teething problems might be. So, for example, some of the players might be a bit concerned about having to relocate. So how's that going to work? I think there's talk of there potentially being some relocation money from the counties built into the tender bid documents. She just said when the regional structure came in, it got to the end of the 2019 season, we had no idea what was happening, but this time around we really feel that we do know, and that we've kind of we've been asked what we thought, basically, and that is really important.
Yes, I think that's really important, this open process.
Yeah.
As for, you know, the actual process itself, you know, I think that, you know, I'm largely on board on it. I mean, one key factor for me, as I do feel that this is the last chance, and this is also something that you said in your Observer article, you know, you almost quoted Eminem there, like, that success is my only option, failure is not. I think Eminem used to add it, threw in a few more colourful words in the middle of that quote. But, you know, this is the third restructure in the space of 10 years. This one's really got to go right. This is going to look very bad if there's another restructure again.
You can't keep moving things in and out of the county structure and expect the counties to continue to be on board with it and expect the people who are actually working to develop county cricket to be on board with it. Because there are people who are very frustrated that 4 years ago, they were told by the ECB, unequivocally, our women's county cricket, we don't see that as a big pathway to develop professional structures, and we think that women's county cricket is not very worthwhile and we're not really going to fund it. And you've got these people who have been plugging away in the background, still trying to develop that, who are now being told, oh, county cricket is the future. And there's actually a bit of a risk that those people currently working within women's county cricket, once the first class counties kind of get on board and really try and embrace it, because they're getting this injection of cash from the ECB, might potentially then be pushed out. And that is something that concerns me in terms of the whole process from a personnel perspective, that actually what happens if for example, your current regional directors of cricket, of which there are eight of them, where do they sit in this new system? Well, ideally, they'd be written into these tender bids, right? And that they'd actually been then brought on board. But where do they then sit within the county? Will the county actually take their views and their knowledge and their intelligence about women's cricket seriously?
Yeah, I mean, you're currently sitting at the top of that kind of that regional pyramid, if you like, if you're the director of women's cricket. If you're folding back into a county, where do you sit? Are you on the board of the county? I can certainly see a situation where some of these people are not on the board and they're just sort of effectively demoted to sort of manager of women's cricket sitting below the board. And, you know, their control kind of slips away. So there's still a lot more of these kinds of things to kind of be ironed out. And,
definitely,
you know, this all of these processes, you know, they're never straightforward when you carry out a restructure. But I think that overall, for me, this process is going to be a positive. I think this is accepting some of the realities of the situation, that the regions just didn't look like they were going to deliver on that third pillar. What is the third pillar? The third pillar is like engaging fans, getting proper degree of fandom. And arguably, the regions weren't given much time to do that. You know, 5 years or 4 years they were really given before. They're going to have existed for 5 years.
And not
they were
much
given
money.
4 years.
Not much money.
Not a huge amount of
either.
Money. You know, I mean, where were our huge? Where was Liverpool Football Club after 4 years? Where was Arsenal Football Club after 4 years? You know, it takes tens of years. It's generally considered that for the Big Bash in Australia, the men's Big Bash took 10 years for those teams to become kind of really part of the kind of national conversation, the national framework, people to accept that there were the kind of things that all had always existed. So the regions weren't given a huge chance in some ways, but it did look like they were never going to be able to generate that kind of fandom. And, you know, as it was, that, you know, some of the regions were effectively, particularly Lancashire, were effectively operating as part of Lancashire. Sorry, I've literally just done it there.
You have.
I've literally referred to Thunder as Lancashire.
You have. Because they were... Do you know what? I did that in my Observer article, but fortunately it got picked up by the copy editors. I said, oh, Phoebe Graham plays for Lancashire Thunder. Anyway.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, they've clearly been pushing that. You know, we know the story of how they printed a load of shirts last year which had Lancashire Thunder written on them, and then the ECB made them remove the word Lancashire because they weren't supposed to be doing that.
But nevertheless... But it's okay, Sid, because when they win the tender this time around, they can use
pull
those
sheets
shirts.
Shirts out of the laundry. Yeah, I mean, they'll probably have the wrong sponsor name on them or something. But, you know, that... nevertheless, when their teams walked out at Old Trafford this year, they've been, you know, here is your Lancashire Thunder. So they've still been doing it. We know that Surrey were also really keen on, you know, having full control over the team. We'd spoken to people at Surrey who had gone, well, you know, we're frustrated by the whole thing.
Yeah, we
because
wasn't
it's not
Surrey
our team.
Stars.
We want it to be our team. Yeah. We'd love to take this over. And, you know, and this is not a coincidence that, of course, you know, this process is being driven in an ECB run by the two Richards. Where did the Sue Richards come from? They came from Surrey. So Surrey, one of the counties that were most frustrated about their lack of control and really wanted to take on that regional team themselves and go, let us make it ours, they were given that opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what the ECB hoped would happen when they made the regions was that the counties would all get on board with these new entities and would give them kind of multiple sources of support. So they might get some money from Surrey to buy kit, and then they might get the ground at Beckenham that Kent can provide.
Yeah, so Surrey and Kent would both push the stars equally.
But I think that the ECB massively underestimated the existing kind of rivalry between counties, and the fact that if you're a business, which the first class counties are, then you are not going to be kind of scratching the back of your neighbour, because that's not how it works. And if you are going to develop something, then you have to have ownership over it, because otherwise it could just float away from you. And that's what they've now concluded, that actually the only way to get the counties to take these women's teams seriously is to actually give them full ownership. So it was a kind of experiment, maybe a little bit of a naive experiment that went slightly wrong. On the other hand, there are now people on social media expressing concerns and saying, well, my county's not going to get one of these teams, so I now feel alienated from the process. And that's what you lose, isn't it? Because in a way, what the ECB wanted was for example, for Western Storm, was for fans of Glamorgan and of Somerset and of Gloucestershire and all of the other bodies that make up Western Storm to all get behind the Western Storm as a team. I don't think that really happened.
It didn't really, did it? So what ended up was effectively no one got behind them. And I think the hope here is that by linking directly to a men's county, that, you know, we'll get that kind of dual fandom, and the men's fans will pay a lot more attention, and then the marketing departments will pay a lot more attention. Because the marketing department, if you're Warwickshire, you know, what you're interested in is promoting Warwickshire. It's really interesting, for example, that Warwickshire, I was recalling, have a mural on their wall inside the stadium at Edgbaston with Izzy Wong in it.
Yeah.
It's not Izzy Wong in Central Sparks kit, it's Izzy Wong in Birmingham Bears kit, in the Birmingham Bears T20 kit. And, you know, that's how they see it. They see Izzy Wong, you know, we can use her, but she's a Birmingham Bears player. Surrey have got a picture of Alice Capsey in Surrey kit, even though she's hardly played a game for Surrey in the last two or three years, because she's obviously been playing for South East Stars. So, you know, if we can do that, then the county marketing departments will push these teams and, you know, we'll get more fans through the door. And as Richard Starkey mentioned on the Naughty Child podcast, you know, hopefully after a double header, you won't get all of the Birmingham Bears fans streaming out of Edgbaston going, well, we're not going to watch the Central Sparks, we don't really know who they are. They'll stay and they'll watch Birmingham Bears women, or, you know, whoever it turns out to be.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you'd imagine that'd be marketed as Birmingham Bears women in...
If Warwickshire win. That is the big question as well.
This is one of the big questions,
well,
isn't it? Right?
Yeah.
Who are going to win? Now, the ECB are determined to tell us that these are not foregone conclusions,
right?
Well,
I did specifically ask this in the press conference at Lord's on Wednesday. What Richard Gold said was basically, we can all do the maths, we can all look around and go, okay, it's quite likely that, for example, that Lancashire are going to win the Thunder franchise, or that certain counties are richer and are better placed to make strong bids. But in no way is it a foregone conclusion.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they've said this almost explicitly by including the MCC in the process.
Yeah.
Including MCC in the process is a bit of an interesting one, isn't it? Because
it is.
A lot of the kind of drive here is going, well, we'll combine these women's teams with an existing men's team. But of course, MCC don't have an existing men's team. Not in a professional sense. Obviously,
yes,
there is an MCC. Sorry, there is an MCC team, but it's you know, that it's not in the part of the professional structures. So the MCC one is an interesting one. But, you know, what they're saying really is that it's not a given that Middlesex will get this, and perhaps Essex will get it. You know, or the MCC might get it.
I think Essex are very strongly placed, actually, because I think that everyone kind of knows that Middlesex are having really really tough problems, and I think that MCC could potentially put together a strong bid because they've got the finances, but it just sits a little bit oddly then alongside this whole new structure. It feels a little bit like including Loughborough Lightning as a host, or including Loughborough University as the host of Loughborough Lightning in the original KSL. It's just a bit weird to have one entity that isn't the same as the other entity.
Yeah, and I think Essex are strongly placed. Their ground is the ideal size for using for one of these
it
kind
is,
of women's teams,
yeah,
because you're much more likely to fill up that ground, and obviously much, you know, much more economical to open that ground at Chelmsford rather than, you know, if you're Middlesex and you're trying to claim that you're going to open Lords, you know, an extra 25 times. It's just not going to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Lords is already pushed for opening
days.
So it's not going to happen. So yeah, Essex are in a great place.
Yeah.
Durham are also, apparently, we're hearing on the grapevine, Durham
really
are going to push
really
very hard.
They're really pushing to win the diamonds.
You know, and there's some interesting questions there. I mean, you've mentioned relocation. That's an interesting one there, because, of course, the current kind of North-East franchise players are all located around Leeds. Durham's a long way from, you can't commute daily from Durham, from Leeds to Durham. That's, you know, it's two and a half, 3 hours drive.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're talking about people moving house, and, you know, that would be a big ask. But one other question I had, Raph, that you can perhaps tell us the answer to, is what happens to the other players So, for instance, currently, you know, if you're at Gloucestershire, what happens to the current Gloucestershire Women's County team if and when Gloucestershire get that kind of Div 1 super county franchise? What happens to the existing kind of amateur county team that played several games? Like, yeah. They had quite a full calendar last year. They had a load of T20 and one day fixtures. Yeah. What happens to them?
You're meant to call it Tier 1, by the way, instead of Div 1. Div 1 was the old Women's County Championships, so get with the programme. So what happens? Well, again, this was actually tackled in the press conference on Wednesday. The idea is that the existing county players at that team, who are basically all currently amateurs, would have the opportunity to push for a spot in the Tier 1 team, so to become professional. Now, you're looking very sceptical, and I agree with you that scepticism is probably warranted, because the idea that somebody who has done next to no professional training or really had access to those facilities or that year-round coaching is going to be able to compete for a spot is probably unrealistic.
Well, they'll be competing with the 15 professional players that currently play.
I'm afraid that the ECB's answer to this isn't great. It's basically go off and play for your neighbouring county.
Okay.
So that is probably a little bit of a concern, in that you are potentially then disenfranchising people to continue to play for the county that they currently play for. But on the other hand, you are then also putting a structure in place that future girls who grow up in that county can aspire to represent that county professionally. So it's probably a move in the right direction, but like many things in women's cricket, while it all beds down, it does have an unfortunate knock-on effect on the people who are currently at the top end of the recreational system.
Now, one other thing that we should talk about is what's the situation with promotion and relegation there, Raf? What's happening?
Doesn't
with that?
Exist, Sid. Okay. Not happening. And that does make sense. It's similar to what the FA did with the Women's Super League, isn't it? It's that in order for these teams to, or for the men's club, I suppose we shouldn't call them men's counties anymore. In order for the counties to actually kind of invest in a way that they can then see a long term future for this team, there has to not be that continuous disruption of teams moving up and down.
You just can't have that risk. And I think that although the ECB have held out the carrot of there being potentially promotion and relegation, you know, in 3, 4, 5 years' time, I don't think that that's ever going to happen. I can't see it.
Well, I think that they're keeping that, like, they're trying to keep that door open, so that because there are going to be big teams that do miss out on hosting a Tier 1 team, for the reason partly that there needs to be an even geographical spread. So we talked about, for example, Essex being a good contender. But what about what about Surrey v Kent for the Stars? What about Sussex v Hampshire for the Vipers? There are some big battles here. There are going to be some disappointment. There's going to be a lot of disappointment amongst a few teams. And so the idea of kind of offering that carrot of a potential promotion into Tier 1 is, I guess, an effort to try and say to those counties who will end up hosting a Tier 2 team, you aren't completely out of it.
Yeah, I can see why they're saying
it. I think it's more likely that Tier 1 will just expand and become a 10-team tier in 2029. And so then you would actually have room for,
so you can hold out a carrot without
Kent or Surrey, whoever doesn't win
someone.
And let's say Sussex v Hampshire, whoever doesn't win that, you can then bring in a couple more of those big players. And so that means that what those Tier 2 counties do between 2025 and 2029 is really significant still.
Okay.
Anyway, I think there is a lot of anxiety because, amongst the regions, we talked about the players that I've spoken to being feeling quite positive about it, but there is obviously anxiety. It's another big change. It's another big upheaval. There are lots of unanswered questions. It's going to be really interesting to see how the process unfolds. And I think that we just, to some extent, we just have to sort of sit back and watch it happen, and we'll keep talking about it. Do send us your views. We'd love to hear them. Shall we move on to the next big bit of news from this week, Sid? Because you wait ages for a bit of news and then two come along at once. We've had the announcement of the England squad versus New Zealand and also the England A squad, which we will talk about as well. Now, this follows on a little bit from the conversation that we had on last week's episode about the WPL, because they have released two separate squads for the first three T20s and then the second two T20s. So sorry if it wasn't clear from what we said last week. There's going to be five T20s for New Zealand. Alice Capsey, Sophie Eccleston, Nat Silverbrand and Danny Wyatt are all staying at WPL. And of course, Kate Cross and Izzy Wong, who aren't in the T20 squad, are also involved in WPL as well. So that's obviously shaped the squad quite significantly, and has meant that England have had to bring in some reinforcements. So Holly Armitage and Lindsay Smith are both in that IT20 squad for the opening three matches. Holly Armitage obviously already out in New Zealand playing in the Super Smash, so that's kind of benefited her in terms of being on site, but has also been there or thereabouts in terms of pushing for a place in the England squad recently. Lindsay Smith has obviously played for England multiple times before, but hasn't played since 2019. So they've both got a bit of a shot at pushing their way back into the squad. Tammy Beaumont also coming back into the T20 squad. A strong hint from John Lewis in his press conference on Friday that she might end up opening the batting. Very interesting.
He basically said he said opening is the only position she can do. It's like it's the only potential role for her is an opener, and that's why she wasn't considered, because they were, they had Dunkson, Danny Wyatt doing
that. Interesting rationale. So we might see her in there. Do you want to talk a bit about that John Lewis press conference, Sid?
Yeah, it was one of the odder press conferences, I think. There were a couple of particularly odd things. The first was that about Freya Kemp. We had a press release.
Yeah.
And the press release said that Freya Kemp has had a recurrence of her injury. Her back injury. And that she will be going with the A team and that she will be playing just as a batter. John Lewis hadn't read his own press release. And he started saying, "Oh, there's nothing wrong with her. There's no injury. We're just being cautious." It would have been fine for them to say, "Oh, we're just being cautious." But mate, your press release just told everyone that she was injured.
Yeah.
So and honestly, I believe the press release there. They haven't retracted the press
she's
release.
She's going to be playing in the A squad as a pure batter.
So she has had an injury, and John Lewis basically misled the press.
Yeah. Well. It was a bit odd, wasn't it?
And then right at the end, another odd moment, right at the end, someone asked him about the domestic restructure.
Yeah.
And he didn't know what he was talking about. He waffled. He did that thing that men, and it is mostly men, often do when they don't know anything. They waffle and carry on waffling. And he waffled for almost 5 minutes.
I've never heard you waffle, Sid. Never heard you waffle.
He clearly didn't. He knew very little about the domestic restructure beyond the very high level, and he just blah 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 blah.
I thought that was a bit strange, because it was very obvious that he would be asked about it, because it's been a huge piece of news.
And he hadn't prepared for it. Robbo would never have done that. Robbo would have known exactly what it was all about. If Lottie had been up there, Lottie would have known exactly what all that was all about.
Well, of course she would.
He did not know about their own restructure.
And the other weird thing is that presumably he's with the England girls at Loughborough at the moment, and this must be like the number one topic of conversation.
So
a bit strange. A couple of kind of pieces of interesting information that did or interesting things that he said that came up in the press conference. Well, one of them was in relation to the WPL. Apparently the ECB actually asked New Zealand Cricket to move the dates of the tour, and they said no. So that's interesting when you're kind of assigning responsibility / blame for the situation that we've ended up in. He did say that he is hopeful that this will be the last time this happens, because he thinks the boards will get together, put their heads together and come up
properly
with a
bash
proper
out
window.
That window. Yeah, and that's what they need to do.
I think is interesting and kind of optimistic, because in the men's game, the BCCI has very much just gone, "We decide. And we'll tell you if you're lucky." So can things be done differently in the women's game? Let's hope so. John Lewis obviously hopes so. He also said something about the captaincy, the England captaincy, because obviously Heather Knight has completely dropped out of WPL, and she's going to be with the England squad from the get-go. And he kind of said that if she was going to be in the WPL, then John Lewis was going to look at other options for the captaincy, because obviously Nat wouldn't be there either as the vice captain to stand in. What was the phrase that he used, Sid?
Well, he said it would have given us the opportunity to look at other options for the captaincy for the future.
So that gives you some insight into presumably Heather Knight's thought process in deciding not to go to the WPL, because as we know, she doesn't seem massively keen for there to be a named captain in waiting, which would have apparently come about.
And they would presumably have had to have picked one of the younger players. They'd have had to have plumped for, you know, Dunks or Charlie Dean or whoever.
Yeah.
And
somebody who they genuinely think could be the next England captain.
Yeah, so... Yeah.
And the other thing that John Lewis said that I thought was a bit odd was kind of justifying his own position with UP Warriors. He is leaving the WPL so that he can join the England squad on, I think he said, the 12th of March, so about a week before the matches actually start in New Zealand. And when asked what UP Warriors made of it, he was just like, oh, they've been fine with it. And, you know, I reckon that the players will probably be fed up with me talking. If they get to the final, they will already have had all my input, and so it won't matter. I'm paraphrasing, but something like that. And I just thought that was a bit of an odd thing to say, because that he's basically saying, oh, you know, if England get to a World Cup final, then they won't really need me, so I'll just disappear and go home. I mean, why couldn't he just say, yeah, it's been quite difficult, and I'm obviously... it has been a bit of a dilemma, but I guess that he's trying to play it down because presumably he wants to keep being able to go and coach in the WPL and do the England job, which I personally think is a bit problematic. But, you know, that's between John Lewis and the ECB. That's for them to decide. That's fine. That's nothing to do with me, really. But it's just, yeah. So that was his explanation. Shall we talk quickly about the England A squad as well, Sid?
Yeah. Because
you're happy, you're 50% happy. They've named Kirsty Gordon as the captain of the T20s, but they have named Grace Scrivens as the captain of the ODIs. Sorry, they're not ODIs, the 50-over matches.
Yeah, they keep calling them ODIs, and they're not, because they're not internationals. Let's talk a little bit about Grace Scrivens. I mean, everyone knows where I stand with this, and it's pretty clear that, if you're making Grace Scrivens, what she was captain for the One Days against Australia last summer, if you're making a 19-year-old, as she was last summer, you know, your England A captain, then it's pretty clear that you see her as the future. You see her as the one. And it's actually pretty exceptional to make someone that young. You know, it would have been no surprise, you know, if they'd said George Adams to be captain. George Adams had a captaincy experience. She's going to be there. She's going to be part of that team. But no, they're really saying that Grace Scrivens is the one. And I think that they're right about that. As for not making her captain for the T20s, I wouldn't have done that. I'd have made her captain for the whole thing. But I can see why they've done it. What they're saying, what the message they're sending to Grace is, look, you know, you are, you know, we think you're the next England captain. We can see all the potential that you've got, but you need to up your T20 game. And that's what she needs to do. And she'll know that. There won't be any secret, but it's the kind of England sending that message. She needs to up her T20 game still in order to, you know, make it absolutely certain that she'll be England captain across all formats in the next couple of years, and then for the next 10 years after that, because she really is an exceptional leader, and they're kind of acknowledging that by giving her that role.
Just a quick shout out to the other John Lewis, who will be captaining the A side. They couldn't have made this more confusing if they tried to.
Coaching the A side, not captaining.
Sorry, coaching the A side. It's just a recipe for enormous press confusion. And public confusion.
One of them should have been required to rename themselves.
Could we go with calling the A squad one the OG John Lewis, because he was the one who was originally the assistant.
I think
coach.
He should just change his name to Cary Grant.
There's some kind of in joke there that I'm not understanding.
Look it up when you get home, Raph.
Okay, right. I think we better wrap things up there. There's lots more that we could talk about. But yes, interested in your views as well on the England squad or squads. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back in a week. Bye-bye.
Bye.